and a new legend begun. She came to Springer with no banner, no witness, no appetite for comfort, only the quiet violence of having been taught wrong things with beautiful music. The world had pressed its mouth to her ear for years and whispered its easiest doctrine. Be small, be sweet, be chosen, be forgiven for your weakness. Let desire be your compass. Let applause be your proof. Let a chorus replace your conscience. She stood at the bronze, the official words shining as if authority could mint a soul. And she laid her hand upon it, the way one touches a gate before leaving a prison. No, she said aloud, because certain spells dissolve only in air. Not to the mountain, not to the weather, to the idea that her mind belonged to anything but her own discipline. And then, very calmly, she spoke her first vow. I will not audition for devotion. I will not bargain with my dignity. I will become, and becoming will be the only permission I require. She stepped north. The trail accepted her without flattery. In the first days, the forest tested her like an honest teacher, not with cruelty, but with consequence. At Stover Creek, she learned the earliest secret, that greatness begins not in grand gestures, but in continuity, in the unglamorous fidelity of doing what strengthens you, again and again. And again, at Hawk Mountain, she watched her thoughts rise like insects from a disturbed log. Old phrases, borrowed values, soft excuses dressed as kindness. And she understood with sudden clarity. Indoctrination is not merely wrongness. It is the violation of sovereignty. It is the theft of a mind's right to become itself. The culture that made her would have called her anger unhealthy. She smiled at the stupidity of that. Anger is unhealthy only when it becomes an aim. But anger can also be the first clean energy, the refusal to be governed by lies. Blood Mountain came like a verdict. Her legs burned, her lungs argued, her shoulders took inventory of every unnecessary thing. Pain arrived with its plain face. No romance in it, no cinematic music, only the raw contract between body and will. The old entertainment doctrine rose in her, faint, melodic. This hurts, therefore stop. This hurts, therefore something is wrong with you. This hurts, therefore you deserve consolation. She watched the thought, as one watches a liar speak. And she answered quietly, so it would become law. Pain is information. I will not blind myself to navigate more comfortably. She did not dramatize it. She did not worship it. She simply used it. At Neil's Gap, where hikers weighed their packs and their pride, she pulled the ornaments out of her life like barbed hooks. She set down what was decorative, objects and stories and old loyalties that had never served her ascent. She kept only what worked. "If I must carry it," she said, "it must deserve me." And as she walked away lighter, she felt something rarer than relief. Honesty. There are places on the trail where the land opens its palm and offers you a sky so wide it seems like permission. The Balds came, Max Patch, their own highlands, green oceans of grass and wind, as if the world were finally willing to be simple. On one such ridge, she stepped and listened to her memory sing. Not a song title, not a melody you could point to in a catalogue, but the doctrine beneath it. 1,000 entertainment stories had trained her to call longing noble, to make hunger a personality, to confuse lust with love, to confuse obsession with destiny, to confuse begging with devotion. Yearning, they had told her, is proof of depth. But the ridge had no patience for that kind of poetry. On open ground where nothing hides, she saw it. Yearning without action is servitude. It is a leash made out of one's own craving. She felt her old heartbreak stir, not as a wound now, but as a fact. And she spoke the correction in a voice made steady by miles. "I have mistaken hunger for guidance. Hunger is only hunger. Guidance is earned." Then she did what the songs never did. She turned longing into training. She walked. Fontana Dam was a great wall, a human attempt to command water with concrete. And she stood above it and saw the moral structure of the world. A wall can hold back a lake. It cannot hold back consequence. You can build systems, you can build institutions, you can build laws, but if the mind inside them is undisciplined, every shelter becomes a prison, every comfort a drug, every routine a coffin. She entered the Smokies as one enters a laboratory, not to admire, but to learn. The highest point arrived in fog and tourists and the Tower of Sight. And in that strange mix of wilderness and convenience, she recognized another lie. Smallness. Masquerading as humility. The timid calling excellence arrogant because it exposes them. She had been trained to apologize for her height, to make herself consumable, to call her hunger for truth too much. She stopped apologizing in her own head. "I will not kneel to be convenient," she said. "I will bow only to what is authentic." The sentence did not make her harsh. It made her clean. Hot Springs came with its streets and doors and ordinary talk, and she felt how easily a human being can be hypnotized by comfort, how quickly a town can convince you that discipline is merely a phase and greatness merely an aesthetic. She slept. She ate. She listened. And then she left. She did not hate comfort. She refused to enthrone it. Virginia opened like a long argument. Miles and miles of proving ground. The slow forging, where the will is either tempered into steel or dissolved back into excuse. The little triple crown arrived with its famous edges. McAfee Knob, Tinker Cliffs, Dragon's Tooth. The world, as always, turned into a stage. Hikers posed, cameras clicked. The cliff received their performance and returned nothing. She sat at the edge and felt the old machinery rise again. If it can be admired, it is valuable. If it is not seen, it is wasted. If nobody witnesses your effort, it does not count. A lie designed for a marketplace. She did not take a triumphant photo. She listened to the wind and to the honest silence between thoughts. And she understood. The crowd is not a tribunal of truth. The crowd is weather. She left the rock quietly, and her leaving was the proof. When she reached Harper's Ferry, she did not smile for the symbolic porch. She stood there and felt the weight of the word halfway. Not arithmetic, not a cute story to tell. A hinge. Listen, there are journeys that do not permit the original self to finish. Halfway is where the child you were, the one who believed the chorus, who mistook popularity for truth, who traded dignity for affection. Halfway is where that self must die. If the journey is to mean anything at all, it all ends there. She sat in a quiet corner and did a small act that was not dramatic, but was irreversible. She erased the playlist of smallness from her life. Not out of bitterness, but out of respect. "I have crossed the line," she said, "where return is not distance, but disgrace." She did not mourn the old self. She thanked it for surviving long enough to bring her here. Then she stood and walked away as someone greater. Pennsylvania, offered its stones like a harsh sermon. Not holy, not comforting. A blunt education. Her ankles learned precision. Her patience learned depth. Her mind learned that suffering does not consult your pride. And in those long days of rock and repetition, she finally understood something that would later become one of her most quoted recordings. Comparison is the cheapest form of self-murder. The world loves to say others have it worse, as if that were wisdom, as if pain required a permit. But the mind is not a courtroom. Pain is not evidence. Pain is a gas. It fills whatever chamber it is given. A small sorrow can consume a whole soul as surely as a large one, until meaning is made. She did not call herself a victim. Victims wait. Victims ask. Victims bargain. She was hardening into something else. A maker of meaning. I do not measure pain to win a contest, she said into her recorder, voice low, so it would travel farther in the listener's mind. I measure it only to learn what it demands of me. Clarity. Courage, and the refusal to turn bitter. A hiker nearby heard her and stopped as if struck. Not by her sadness, but by her accuracy. That is how her legend begun. Not with applause, but with recognition. In New Jersey, in New York, the world pressed close again. Roads, noise, crowds. The machine humming its invitation. Come back. Be entertained. Be fed easy stories. Be distracted into forgetfulness. Be distracted into routine. She walked through it without surrender. I can pass through the machine, she said, without becoming a cog. Connecticut softened into river and green. Massachusetts lifted her to Greylock, and she felt refinement settle in her bones, like a second skeleton. By Vermont, her anger had changed. It no longer burned to destroy. It burned to illuminate. She had begun to notice something terrifying and simple. People do not fail because they are incapable. People fail because they were trained to worship the wrong things. Trained by institutions that require small souls to survive. Trained by entertainment that sells childishness as charm. Trained by a culture that mistakes morbid indulgence for freedom. And yet, under it all, under the grime of indoctrination, there was always the same hunger. The hunger for greatness. Human nobility. Damaged, yes. Warped, yeah. But not extinguished. That was the sacred thing she meant when she said sacred. Not religion, not ritual, not superstition, not imaginary creatures. But the inviolable worth of a mind meant to rise. New Hampshire arrived like adulthood. Muzalauke, Fraconia Ridge. Treeline, weather, exposure. Above treeline, there is no hiding. There's only correctness. Every false story becomes lethal there. The old doctrine, you are fragile, therefore you must be protected from difficulty, died in the wind. She learned the mountain's lure. Fear is not insight. It is a gatekeeper that can be fired. On Fraconia Ridge, she walked as if moving through a clean thought. Precise, deliberate, unafraid of being alone in her standards. And those who saw her remember her, because she looked like what human beings are supposed to look like when they stop asking permission to be calm. Then Maine. Maine does not flatter. Maine does not entertain. Maine strips you down until only the essential remains. Mahoosic Notch, the so-called longest mile, came like a riddle made of boulders and dark air. In the crevices, the world was close and cold. The pack snagged, the knees cursed, the mind reached for old poison. This is unfair. This is too much. You are not meant for this. She laughed once in the dark. Unfair is a child's word, she said. Reality owes me nothing but truth. And she moved, slowly, carefully, not heroic, not cinematic, simply competent. She emerged on the other side with scraped hands and clear eyes. She did not celebrate. She recorded. "You who are listening," she said. Breath still rough. The world has trained you to think discomfort means that you are failing. It's lying. Discomfort often means you are learning to stand upright. Her voice was plain, but it had the power of stone. Rangeley, Bigelow's, Kennebec Crossing, Monson, with its last small comforts. And then the threshold. The one that makes people quiet when they speak of it. The 100-mile wilderness. No audience. No city. No rescue narrative. Only character. The silence there is not empty. It is a mirror that does not blink. For days she walked with no input except wind and thought. And in that long quiet, she heard, at last, the voice beneath all the borrowed voices. Her own mind sober, capable, hungry for truth. She realized something that made her stop in the middle of the trees, as if the world had spoken a sentence and she needed to bow to it. Noise made her childlike. Silence made her accurate. Accuracy was mercy, because it ended self-deception. She began to speak only once each night, into her recorder, as if making rations of language. Not for fame, for transmission. For the poor who could afford only audio, for the exhausted who could not read after work, for the young whose minds were being rented out by choruses and screens. She did not call them foolish. She assumed their nobility. And because she assumed it, she spoke to it. "Your mind is not public property," she told them in the dark. "No screen has rights over it. No chorus can own it. No fashionable despair gets to move in and call itself you. Do not accept the romance of weakness. Do not call begging love. Do not call drifting freedom." The forest received her words without clapping. That was how she knew they were clean. A ball bridge arrived like the last page of a long proof. Katahdin rose beyond it. Not merely a mountain now, but a symbol of verdict. Either you grew, or you did not. She slept little the last night. Not from fear, but from clarity and from a kind of sadness. At dawn, she began to climb. Her body complained in old language again, the language of comfort, the dialect of excuse. Her will answered in the new language that she had forged, the language of standards. When the trail steepened, she did not bargain. When the rocks demanded attention, she gave it. When the wind rose, she did not ask it to be kinder. She simply became stronger. As she climbed, she felt the final temptation, the last entertainment lie trying to reclaim her. Make it dramatic. Make it romantic. Make it about being rescued. Make it about being adored. She rejected it with a disgust so absolute, it was almost frightening. "I am not here to be witnessed. I am here to rise." And then the summit, the sign, the sky, the long folds of country. the end of one line and the beginning of a life. She laid her hand on the wood, and for a moment she did not speak. She wept, not out of sorrow, out of recognition, out of the clean grief of seeing what had been done to human beings. How many taught to confuse pleasure with joy, noise with meaning, lust with love, routine with life, indoctrination with knowledge, wisdom, and greatness. How many trained to remain childlike, so they could be marketed to, ruled, exploited, softened, redirected. How many robbed and then blamed for the robbery? Her tears were not a collapse. They were a rite of passage, a washing by truth, a consecration by clarity. She turned to the vastness and spoke in a new tongue, not ornate, not sentimental, but severe with love for the highest in us. "I reject the culture of smallness," she said. "I reject the songs that train the young to beg. I reject the stories that make dependency cute and ignorance charming. I reject the romance of weakness." Her voice did not tremble. It rang. "And I do not forgive the theft." That sentence went out like a bell, like greatness. "It is not because I hate small people," she continued, "but because I refuse to cooperate with the machinery that keeps them small. The human mind is not a rental property. No institution, no brand, no party, no preacher, no lover, no chorus has the right to occupy it." She looked down the long, invisible line she walked. "Growing all the way up is not optional," she said. "It is the only sane answer to betrayal. To become strong is to become unbiable, unbreakable. To become clear is to become ungovernable by lies and deceptions. To become dignified is to become contagious." Then she lifted her recorder like a messenger. "You who hear me," she said softly now, as if speaking to a single exhausted person in a dim room, "you are not mediocre by nature. You have been trained into smallness by everything you know. You have been entertained into drift. But you can rise. And you must." She drew a breath and made her final vow. The vow that turned her from a solitary walker into a philosopher. A disenchanted mother of the mind. Severe. Because she believed in her listener. I will be calling you upward. With truth, with standards, with the hard mercy of clarity. I will not soothe you into sleep. I will wake you into greatness. The wind took the last of her tears and scattered them into the vast air. And the mountain did not praise her, because reality does not praise. Reality crowns. She stood at the top as if she had always belonged there, because she has chosen the correct path, the path of greatness. And somewhere far below, in a small room in a factory break area, in a car before a night shift, in a cheap apartment where books were scarce, but headphones were possible, someone heard her recording and felt for the first time tears not of misery, but of recognition and rising. The ancient quest is still the only way to grow up. And he stood a little straighter. And a new legend begun.